Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Reed, and this is the Midland Reporter-Telegram Health and Wellness for Wednesday, June 8th, 2022. Latest DAISY Award winner from NICU. Pena's Extraordinary Compassionate Care earns Nursing Award. Please join us in congratulating our latest DAISY Award winner, Cambry Pena, BSN-RN. Cambry works in the Neonatal Intensive Care Unit and was nominated for the prestigious DAISY Award by a patient's family who was powerfully impacted by the care received from Cambry. The DAISY Award is an international nursing recognition program created to honor nurses who provide extraordinary, compassionate care. Midland Memorial Hospital is one of over 4,900 healthcare facilities and schools of nursing worldwide that recognizes their nurses with this prestigious award. Anyone in the facility can nominate a nurse, be it a patient or visitor, another nurse, physician, or any other staff member. Anyone who experiences or observes extraordinary compassionate care being provided by a nurse. The family member wrote the following about Cambry. Quote, when my wife unexpectedly went into labor a month before our planned due date, we were scared to say the least. After a successful delivery, we soon learned that our son had some breathing challenges that necessitated a stay for an indefinite amount of time in the NICU. He was transferred to NICU right at shift change and was immediately surrounded by caring and compassionate nurses. As we struggled with understanding the challenges our son would be facing, a young nurse named Cambry stepped in and immediately calmed the entire situation down. Her demeanor, attitude, and compassion toward our son completely reset our emotional state. She patiently answered all of our questions and took special care to make sure we felt welcomed in the NICU for multiple consecutive full night shifts, checking on us as much as she checked on our son. Her efforts made an immediate impact in my wife, and I truly believe expedited her recovery as she quickly became comfortable in the quality of the care he was receiving. Each successive night, Cambry walked us through the tests, labs, individual equipment, and every single touch and interaction that our son required. All that time, the calm and compassionate professionalism she bestowed on us kept us perfectly at ease and made us feel at home in the NICU. It is a rare moment to find somebody so truly passionate and well-suited to their chosen profession, and we would like to recognize and nominate Cambry for what we feel is a unique and invaluable skill set. Our lives and the life of our son were made better for having her in them. End quote. It is because of Cambry's compassionate and caring efforts that her patient experienced a level of care that exemplifies the impact nurses have in creating an environment where patients and families feel at home. Congratulations, Cambry Pena. Midland Walkabout Club strolls around Sand Hills State Park. Heat shortens exploration of flora, fauna. On May 7th, the Midland Walkabout Club strolled through 7 kilometers on asphalt among scenic and sand dunes and many occupied campsites at the Monahan Sand Hills State Park. Viewing included colorful flowers, a lizard, bugs, and tracks of javelina, birds, and snakes. The group's normal 10 kilometers were shortened by the heat when the temperature reached 90 degrees. Walkers had self-registered and paid the park fees on the honor system, as the park staff, working out of temporary headquarters located deep in the park, was reduced for employees who wanted to enjoy Mother's Day weekend off-duty. At the halfway point, the group enjoyed a self-guided tour of outdoor exhibits of flora and fauna near the closed-for-remodeling park headquarters and museum. Afterward, in keeping with their usual habit, walkers enjoyed lunch at a Monahan's restaurant. Participants of note included one master naturalist, one member who, so far, has completed walks in each of 24 of the 50 states, one new to Midland with only a week of club membership, one who has tutored or taught 3 foreign languages in Midland, Spanish, French, and German, and a couple with nearly 52 years of marriage. Senior Life Midland to host March for Meals. Senior Life Midland is gearing up for the annual March for Meals event, scheduled for Saturday at Midland College in front of the Allison Fine Arts Building. This event begins at 9 a.m. with line dancing by the seniors of Southeast Senior Center, Planting Seeds of Hope sponsored by West Texas National Bank, a time capsule to cement one's place in Midland's history, great prizes and awards. Through March for Meals, Senior Life Midland brings awareness of the challenges, food insecurity, isolation, and loneliness seniors face daily. Quote, Senior Life Midland has a long-standing history of meeting the daily needs of Midland seniors through programs such as Meals on Wheels and Homebound Services, end quote, said Tracy Renton, Director of Development and Marketing. Quote, this year's event has something very special, a time capsule to be placed at the new Senior Life Midland when constructed and to be opened in 30 years, end quote. The Meals on Wheels program began in Midland in 1974 to reduce the number of elderly individuals suffering from hunger and malnutrition through home-delivered meals. This program helps to reduce the number of homebound, socially isolated elderly through important services provided by Senior Life Midland. Two studies. Some cancer patients can skip treatments. After surgery, some cancer patients can safely skip radiation or chemotherapy, according to two studies exploring shorter, gentler cancer care. Researchers are looking for ways to precisely predict which cancer patients can avoid unneeded treatment to cut down on harmful side effects and unnecessary costs. One new study used a blood test to determine which colon cancer patients could skip chemotherapy after surgery. Another suggests some low-risk breast cancer patients can omit radiation after lumpectomy. The research was discussed at the annual meeting of the American Society of Clinical Oncology, which wrapped up Tuesday in Chicago. The colon cancer study, funded by the Australian and U.S. governments and nonprofit groups, was published Saturday by the New England Journal of Medicine. The findings could allow doctors to, quote, focus on the patients we think would truly benefit from chemotherapy and avoid the side effects for patients for whom it's likely unnecessary, end quote, said Dr. Stacy Cohen of Fred Hutchinson Cancer Center in Seattle, who reviewed the colon cancer findings and was not involved in the research. Colon cancer. Many colon cancer patients are given chemotherapy after surgery, even though they may be cured. The drugs can come with side effects such as nausea, anemia, and memory problems. But pinpointing which patients might not need further treatment has been tricky. Scientists studied whether a blood test could help doctors make the call. The study involved 455 patients who had surgery because cancer had spread into the colon wall. After surgery, one group received a blood test customized to their tumor's genetic profile to detect any remaining bits of cancer DNA. Their care was guided by the blood test. If it showed no signs of remaining cancer, the patients did not get chemotherapy. Meanwhile, doctors made chemo decisions for the rest of the patients in the usual way, guided by the analysis of the tumor and nearby tissue. Skipping chemo makes, quote, a big difference in a person's quality of life if that can be done without having to put them at jeopardy for recurrence, end quote, said ASCO President Dr. Everett Vokes, who specializes in head and neck and lung cancer at University of Chicago Medicine. Breast cancer. The other study followed 500 older women with a common form of early-stage breast cancer and low levels of a protein known as Ki-67, a marker for fast-growing cancer. After surgery, the women took hormone-blocking pills, a standard treatment for this type of cancer, but they did not get radiation treatment. After 5 years, 10 of the women saw cancer return in the same breast, and there was one breast cancer death. There was no comparison group, but researchers said the results compare favorably to historical data for similar patients who had radiation. Quote, we estimate the benefits of radiation would be very small in this population compared to the side effects, end quote, said Dr. Timothy Whalen of McMaster University in Hamilton, Ontario, who led the study, which was supported by the Canadian Breast Cancer Foundation and the Canadian Cancer Society. Radiation can cause skin problems, fatigue, and less commonly, long-term heart problems and second cancers. When to save or splurge on groceries. Grocery shopping can become overwhelming after reading different food labels and seeing the price tags. Although it is important to choose nutritious products, a Baylor College of Medicine dietitian outlines what foods are worth saving on and which ones to splurge on. Quote, when it comes to a product labeled as organic, it all boils down to taste and budget, end quote, said Courtney Carey, senior registered dietitian in the Department of Medicine, Gastroenterology and Hepatology at Baylor. Produce. Organic and non-organic produce have the same amount of nutrition, including the same amount of fiber, carbs, and vitamins and minerals. Both use pesticides as well, but organic produce pass different laws to be labeled as organic. Meat. Meat often is labeled as antibiotic-free or hormone-free, but Carrie points out that by law, all meat products at the end of production must be hormone and antibiotic-free before they are put on the market. This applies to organic and non-organic meat products. Quote, just like humans, when animals get sick, they take antibiotics. It's not a bad thing, but it is marketed as such, end quote, she said. Grass-fed and grass-finished products have different nutrient profiles, as well as different tastes and fat levels. Grass-fed and grass-finished beef, for example, is leaner than corn-fed beef. If your budget allows, purchase grass-fed meat products. Dairy. Avoid spending extra on milk labeled as, quote, hormone-free, end quote, as all milk is free of hormones. All milk is fortified with vitamin A and vitamin D, and the nutrition is the same. If organic milk is more expensive, avoid splurging on it. All dairy products are gluten-free, so don't fall for more expensive dairy products that promote that. Eggs. Cage-free, pasture-raised, and organic eggs are equal in nutritional value. If you want to purchase conflict-free, cruelty-free eggs, buy pasture-raised eggs. If that is not in your budget, you can buy any other eggs as they contain the same nutritional value. Nuts. Certain types of nuts, like cashews and pine nuts, are more expensive because it takes more labor to produce them. To incorporate nuts in your diet, you don't have to splurge on pricier nuts. Cheaper nuts include walnuts and pecans and give you more bang for your buck. Benefits of walnuts include high in omega-3s, high in fiber, and assist with lowering cholesterol. Quote, all nuts are very high in unsaturated fat, which is a heart-healthy fat, so it's all about your preference, end quote, Carrie said. Vitamins, supplements. Taking a multivitamin is not absolutely necessary, nor will it prevent you from having an adverse cardiac event or stroke. But taking vitamins is a good way to cover your bases. Because vitamins and supplements are not regulated by the FDA, Carrie stresses the importance of third-party validation for safety. Quote, vitamins, minerals, supplements, pre-workout, or whatever you put in your mouth that isn't a food product is not regulated by the FDA for purity and quality. You have to be very careful when buying these items to make sure they're verified for quality and purity by a third party, end quote, she said. Type 2 diabetes may accelerate brain function decline. In older people with type 2 diabetes, the brain appears to age at an accelerated rate, about 26% faster than normal, according to research published in the journal eLife. Relying on brain scans, brain functioning tests, and other data from 20,314 people, ages 50 to 80, the researchers compared neurological changes in those who did and did not have type 2 diabetes. In both groups, they found declines in executive functions such as working memory, learning, and flexible thinking, as well as declines in brain processing speed. The declines, however, were greater and occurred faster in people with diabetes. Executive functions declined 13% more among those with diabetes, and brain processing speed decreased 7% more than for those who did not have diabetes, causing earlier cognitive decline than seen with normal aging. The researchers also compared their findings with the results from 94 published studies, confirming that diabetes led to, quote, markedly lower, end quote, cognitive performance when compared with people of comparable age and education who did not have the disease. Today, an estimated 37.3 million U.S. residents have diabetes, including about 8.5 million who have not been diagnosed, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. In addition, about 96 million American adults have prediabetes, meaning they are on the cusp of having full-fledged diabetes. Currently, the researchers wrote, quote, few patients with type 2 diabetes undergo a comprehensive neurocognitive evaluation as part of their clinical care, end quote. Your liver is younger than you think. When it comes to the human body, age is just a number. Thanks to the regenerative powers of human cells, our bodies constantly create new cells, to the tune of about 330 billion a day. But until now, researchers haven't known much about how long the cells of one of the most important organs, the liver, live. Research in the journal Cell Systems reveals that humans' livers are forever young, clocking in at less than 3 years old despite their host's biological age. German researchers studied the livers of 33 adults who were between ages 20 and 84 when they died. They isolated the nuclei of liver cells called hepatocytes, the workhorses of the human liver. Hepatocytes make up the bulk of the human liver and perform a dizzying variety of tasks, from aiding with metabolism to taking part in the body's immune response. The researchers wanted to know whether hepatocytes are long-lived, like neurons or the heart's muscle cells, or whether they're more transient. Previous studies had focused mainly on rodent livers, leaving unanswered questions on the life cycle of human liver cells.
Hello, this is Michael, reading additional articles from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, published Wednesday, June 8, 2022. From the Business and Oil page, Heat Wave Could Threaten ERCOT Records, by Shelby Webb, staff writer. Texas's electrical grid manager forecasts that demand for power will reach an all-time high on Wednesday. Officials with the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, in their day-ahead forecast, said that Texans could use 75,186 megawatts of electricity today, exceeding the record 74,820 megawatts used on August 12, 2019. 1 megawatt is enough electricity to power about 200 homes on a hot summer day. Despite the soaring demand, the agency expects sufficient generation to meet forecasted demand, ERCOT spokeswoman Christy Pender said. Forecasters had said the record would be broken Tuesday before reducing their estimated peak demand to 73,660 megawatts at 6 p.m. Record high temperatures are expected to blanket much of the state this week, according to the Space City weather website. High pressure will park over the region, helping to boost expected temperatures into the upper 90s starting today. By Saturday, temperatures could close in on 100 degrees across the Houston area. Meanwhile, demand for power is expected to climb much higher. In their seasonal assessment of resource adequacy for summer, ERCOT officials wrote that demand could reach as high as 77,317 megawatts. The report's authors chalked up that increase to a growing population and new commercial operations that have moved into the state. The report also said 91,392 megawatts of generation are expected to be available during peak summer demand. Yellen says inflation likely to stay high, by Christopher Condon, Bloomberg. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen told U.S. lawmakers, peppering her Tuesday with questions about the surge in the cost of living, that inflation is likely to stay high and that she ought not to have termed big price increases as transitory last year. Yellen, in a Senate Finance Committee hearing, continued to defend President Joe Biden's $1.9 trillion American Rescue Plan, which Republicans have blamed for helping drive inflation to a four-decade high. Senator, we're seeing high inflation in almost all developed countries around the world, and they have very different fiscal policies, Yellen said in response to Montana Republican Steve Daines. It can't be the case that the bulk of the inflation we're experiencing reflects the impact of the ARP. She acknowledged once again that both she and Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell erred in 2021 by forecasting that high inflation wouldn't persist. Both of us probably could have used a better term than transitory, she said. Remain high. There's no question that we have huge inflation pressures, that inflation is really our top economic problem at this point, and that it's critical we address it, she added. I do expect inflation to remain high, although I much hope that it will be coming down. The hearing comes 3 days before a report forecast to show consumer prices rose 8.2% in the year to May, remaining near the 40-year high of 8.5% reached in March. Lawmakers from both sides of the aisle highlighted their own concerns with inflation ahead of midterm congressional elections in November, where Democrats will be challenged to retain their control. Inflation is number one issue I hear from Granite Staters, said Democrat Maggie Hassan of New Hampshire, who's up for re-election in November. Drug costs. Republican John Barrasso of Wyoming questioned Yellen's credibility, given that last year she had termed inflation as manageable. Yellen, along with Democratic senators, highlighted proposals to help address living costs through measures, including lowering prescription drug costs. Republicans attacked Yellen for wanting yet more spending, even after the AARP had fueled price gains. Yellen said that last year's plan was enacted at a time when the economy remained in serious peril from the pandemic. In designing a policy, there are various risks that need to be taken into account, Yellen said. Of course, inflation was one of them, but the overwhelming risk was that Americans would be scarred by a deep and long recession. The Treasury chief repeated her view that unexpected shocks, including Russia's invasion of Ukraine, were not predictable and contributed significantly to the inflation Americans continue to experience. Putin's war in Ukraine is having impacts on energy and food prices globally, she said. It's virtually impossible for us to insulate ourselves from shocks like that from the war, she said. The hearing was on Biden's 2023 budget proposal. Yellen told lawmakers that the plan would complement the Fed's efforts to rein in inflation by enacting programs that would help contain costs for Americans on energy, healthcare, and pharmaceuticals. Deficit reduction would also help, she said. And now state news. Abbott wants TSU to offer shooter training. By Corbett Smith, Dallas Morning News. Governor Greg Abbott wants more active shooter response training for schools, particularly for district police and school resource officers. On Monday, the governor sent a letter to Pete Blair, the executive director of the Advanced Law Enforcement Rapid Response Training Program at Texas State University, directing him to begin providing his organization's training program to all school districts across the state, prioritizing school-based law enforcement. The letter stated that training for all districts must start before the next school year begins, and Abbott knows that trainers within the state's Department of Public Safety stand ready to help provide this life-saving training to campuses across the state as quickly as possible. Additional funding to ramp up training was not mentioned in the letter. Abbott also asked that Texas State's Alert Center provide an after-action debrief of the shooting in Uvalde once the investigation is complete, and of other relevant situations to school administrators, law enforcement, and others charged with keeping our Texas schools safe. We sadly recognize we cannot do anything to bring back the precious lives that were taken. However, we must do everything in our power to prevent the same tragic ending from happening again, Abbott wrote. Abbott's request is one of a handful of responses that he's taken since the Uvalde school mass shooting, which left 19 students and two teachers dead. Last week, the governor charged the director of the university's Texas School Safety Center to do in-person random intruder detection audits at campuses. He also asked state lawmakers to convene special legislative committees to develop recommendations on school safety, mental health, social media, police training, firearm safety, and more. Blair told the Dallas Morning News on Monday afternoon that his center already provides training for district police and school resource officers. Such law enforcement can participate in the training, which is provided at no cost to the officers, relying on state and federal training funds, provided that space is available when requested. Blair could not readily provide a number of districts that have taken part in alert training. Craig Miller, a school security consultant and former Dallas ISD police chief, estimated that a majority of officers on campuses have trained through the ALERT program, as most of the state's approximately 300 school police departments use the Texas State training. Meanwhile, those districts that rely on SROs from municipal police departments likely have used that training as well, he noted. Dallas ISD, for example, has used the program since 2010, DISD spokesperson Karen Rodriguez said. Founded in 2002, Texas State's Alert Center is considered one of the top active shooter response training programs in the country, training law enforcement officials nationwide. After the 2012 Sandy Hook Elementary School shooting, the Alert program was adopted by the FBI as the national standard for special agent tactical instructors. Several states and cities have done the same. Over 200,000 first responders have gone through the basic course, according to the governor's letter, which includes 16 hours of training in team movement, room entry techniques, approach and breaching the crisis, shooting and moving, as well as post-engagement priorities of work. Miller noted that during his time in Dallas, the district used the more expansive train-the-trainer model, a 40-hour course. Officers were trained every summer on the techniques, he added. Active shooter programs like ALERT are typically based on the theoretical and a practical component, said Alex Del Carmen, a Tarleton State University associate dean and criminologist. Attendants are taught strategies, techniques, and other various components to respond to an active shooter, such as how to determine the best points of entry or departure, Del Carmen said. Then, a great deal of the training is a simulation, Del Carmen said. So the idea is to put the officer in a scenario that will resemble real-life circumstances to try and get the officer to think clearly and immediately with a great deal of stressors around the officer. The hope of such training is to essentially build muscle memory, creating that mindset that allows for people to respond in the manner in which they need to when an emergency occurs, said Lisa Womack, former chief of police in Sugarland and consultant with the Arlington-based police practices consulting firm, the Bowman Group. McConaughey calls for gun control legislation at White House, by Amar Mahani, Associated Press, Washington. Academy Award-winning actor Matthew McConaughey took center stage at the White House briefing Tuesday to call on Congress to reach a higher ground and pass gun control legislation in honor of the children and teachers killed in last month's shooting rampage at an elementary school in his hometown of Uvalde. In a highly personal 22-minute speech, McConaughey offered a full-throated exhortation for a gridlocked Congress to pass gun reforms that can save lives without infringing on Second Amendment rights. McConaughey, a gun owner himself, used his star power to make an argument for legislation in a fashion that the Biden administration has not been able to, offering a clear connection to the small Texas town and vividly detailing the sheer loss of the 19 children and two teachers and the second worst mass shooting in school shooting in U.S. history. We want secure and safe schools, and we want gun laws that won't make it easy for the bad guys to get the damn guns, McConaughey said. McConaughey, who earlier this year considered a run for governor in Texas before taking a pass, met briefly with President Joe Biden before addressing the White House press corps from the James Brady briefing room. McConaughey, who declined to take questions, spoke of his own connections to the town. He said his mother taught kindergarten less than a mile from Uvalde's Robb Elementary School, the site of the May 24th school shooting. He also noted that Uvalde was the place where he was taught about responsibilities that come with gun ownership. Uvalde is where I was taught to revere the power and the capability of the tool that we call a gun. Uvalde is where I learned responsible gun ownership, he said. McConaughey said he and his wife drove back to Uvalde on the day after the shooting and spent time with the families of some of the victims and others directly impacted by the rampage. He said every parent he spoke to expressed that they want their children's dreams to live on. They want to make their loss of life matter, McConaughey said. He related the personal stories of a number of victims. He held up artwork from Alethea Ramirez, who dreamed of attending art school in Paris. He told the story of Mati Rodriguez, an aspiring marine biologist. McConaughey's wife, Camilla, sitting nearby for his speech, held the green Converse sneakers Mati regularly wore. One, she drew a red heart on the right toe to represent her love for nature. And then there was Alejana Ellie Garcia, 10, who loved dancing and church and already knew how to drive tractors. Ellie was looking forward to reading a Bible verse at an upcoming church service when she was killed. McConaughey acknowledged that gun legislation would not end mass shootings, but suggested that steps can be taken to lessen the chances of such tragedies happening so frequently. We need to invest in mental health care, McConaughey said. We need safer schools. We need to restrain sensationalized media coverage. We need to restore our family values. We need to restore our American values. And we need responsible gun ownership. Is this a cure-all? Hell no, but people are hurting.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Birth Control After Blood Clot. Dear Dr. Roach, I just recovered from a blood clot in my leg. I had to take Eliquis for 6 months. What are some options for birth control? My gynecologist said that I shouldn't take birth control pills since I was taking them when I got the blood clot. Answer: A discussion between your regular doctor and your gynecologist would be a really good idea here. A person who has a history of blood clotting with estrogen-containing oral contraceptives should certainly avoid taking them. The best choice is probably an intrauterine device, IUD, because it is both safe and effective and does not increase clot risk. Oral progesterone-only options are available, often called the mini pill, and are almost as effective. Many experts avoid injections of progesterone as there might be an increased risk of clotting as seen in some studies. Because the most common type of progesterone-only pill doesn't stay long in the body compared with the much more commonly used combined oral contraceptives, it's important to take the pill at the same time every day.
This is the Dear Abby column. First wife has second thoughts on polygamy. Dear Abby, my husband and I are in our 40s. Last year, we decided to make a very big change in our lives. We decided to seek out a second wife, sister wife, for my husband. I was completely on board with it at first. He reached out to a woman he knew years ago and asked if she would consider joining our family. However, I started getting this feeling that she wasn't the right woman to bring into our family. She ignored many of my in-depth questions about why she wanted to live this type of life. I have expressed to my husband that I no longer want her in my life, and it has reached the point that I no longer want to live a plural lifestyle. I felt bad that I'm the one who changed my mind, so I agreed to allow them to continue a relationship as long as they keep me out of it, and he keeps her out of my home and my life. I don't understand how he can continue living this way, living two separate lives, and be okay with it. We've been together more than 20 years, and I don't want to leave. But how can I continue loving a man with my whole heart and soul when he only loves me with part of his? Signed, Sister Wife. Dear Wife, relationships such as you describe can work out when all three of the parties involved feel they are equally valued. Some women tolerate their husband having someone on the side because they derive some benefit beyond the emotional connection one associates with marriage. That said, in the final analysis, the only person who can answer the question you're asking me is you. Dear Abby, I am an 11-year-old girl. My 16-year-old sister has severe depression and an eating disorder. She has been to the hospital twice because of it, and now she has to go to the hospital every day to get her to eat more. Even though people are helping her, I don't think she's getting better. It makes me feel worried and sad. My mom has me seeing a therapist, and she helps me to feel better, but it's still hard knowing my sister is having such a hard time. I have never dealt with anything this hard in my life. I wish I could just not have to always think about how sad I am. I really want everything to be normal. Can you tell me ways to not get so upset about everything that's going on? Signed, Having a Hard Time in Iowa. Dear Having a Hard Time, I'm glad you are seeing a therapist you can talk to about your sadness and worry. Being able to discuss them with someone you trust and who isn't emotionally involved can be a blessing. I do have a suggestion that might help you in addition to your therapy. Participate in sports activities and hobbies that keep your mind occupied. If you keep yourself busy, you will have less time to dwell on your sadness and worry. And please, write me again in a couple of months and let me know how you are doing, because I'm hopeful you will be feeling better than you do right now. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.